This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, February 25th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from my home studio just north of New York City. Let's get some news and notes of the day before our packed guest list. Yankees pitcher Domingo Germán apologized for his domestic violence incident, which actually took place 2 years ago. The quote that he gave to reporters on Zoom calls, he read from a piece of paper. "I want to take this opportunity before answering questions to sincerely apologize to the Steinbrenner family, my teammates, the front office, and those around me who love me." According to stories that I read, Domingo also spoke directly to the players in the clubhouse. That seemed to have been generally well-received. Luke Voit was quoted as saying is that it was a good start. He hasn't played since September 2019 after receiving an 81-game suspension. The 28-year-old was 18-4 with a 4.03 ERA in 2019 when he was put on administrative leave while MLB investigated an alleged domestic violence incident involving his girlfriend with whom he has at least one child. Mariners prospect Jared Kelenic, he, of course, was the primary piece in that trade between the Mariners and the Mets. Robinson Cano, Edwin Diaz going to the Mets, Jared Kelenic going to the Mariners. He talked to USA Today, my friend Bob Nightingale, about how the Mariners have manipulated his service time. He basically told Bob that he had chances to be in the big leagues, but he was told that unless he signed a multi-year contract, you would presume that would be a team-friendly contract, that he wasn't going to go to the big leagues. The quote from Jared, "Money shouldn't determine when a player is called up to the big leagues. It was told to me several times." We'll be talking with Aldin Gonzalez about that later in the podcast. AL MVP Jose Abreu tested positive for COVID-19. Thank goodness so far, according to general manager Rick Hahn, he's completely asymptomatic. And for now, Abreu is merely going to just stay away from the team for a few days. Shane Bieber, who tested positive for COVID recently, hopes to be talking about a new contract with the Cleveland Indians as soon as possible. Last year, Bieber was unbelievable. He was the best pitcher in baseball, leading the majors in wins, ERA, and strikeouts. This was just awful. Minnesota Twins top prospect Royce Lewis, a shortstop, tore his ACL in his right knee, and he'll miss the entire 2021 season. Here is Derek Falvey, the head of baseball operations for the Twins, talking about that injury.
As a result of, he said he was doing some side-to-side running, just preparing, getting ready, and felt some soreness about a week ago. And then subsequent to that also, he lives in the Dallas area, had slipped on some ice, and still felt some soreness. So when he came in, he reported that to our orthopedics. They did the hands-on evaluation, which then led to wanting to get an MRI. And unfortunately, the news today is that it reveals he does have a right full-thickness ACL tear in his right knee. And as a result, we'll undergo surgery.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. looks fantastic. He spent a lot of the time during the offseason working on his conditioning. He sounds great, looks great, as he spoke with reporters yesterday through an interpreter.
Right now, I feel very motivated. We've been talking through the offseason on me playing actually third and first base both. So I prepared myself for both positions. I feel very comfortable mentally, physically. So I'm ready to play whatever the teams need me.
You would assume that his representatives have talked to him about playing a position that his value is going to be a lot higher if he can play third base or even first base than if he just becomes a full-time designated hitter. The great Shin-Soo Chu has agreed to play for a club in South Korea on a one-year, $2.4 million contract. He, of course, for years has been in the big leagues, most recently with the Texas Rangers, one of the great people in baseball. Yesterday, Shohei Ohtani, through live batting practice, his fastball was clocked up to 97 miles per hour. The Angels are going to continue to try to work with him on being a two-way player. We're going to be talking with Aldin about that coming up, as well as talking with FB Santangelo, the Nationals analyst, as we continue our National League East preview, and Sarah Langs. Before we get to all that, two things I want to mention. Check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+. And don't forget, check out Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin weekdays from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN2, and listen to the show wherever you get your podcast.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Alan Gonzalez covers baseball for ESPN. And Alan, you know, in your previous life, for a time, you covered the Angels specifically. And they're a team of great curiosity around baseball this year because Perry Minasian has come in, first-year general manager of the team. He clearly is trying to ramp up the team for this year to please owner Artie Moreno and get them back into the playoffs. He's making moves with his starting rotation. And a big question for them is, what is Shohei Ohtani going to be? What do you see?
Yeah, Buster, and I feel like I was in this position about, I want to say 12 months ago, with the Angels really highly anticipating what Shohei Ohtani could do coming off Tommy John surgery. And it's even more crucial now, and I got to say the optimism is a lot higher now, even coming off a really rough 2020 season. But so you look at that rotation and what Perry Minasian did this offseason, there are a lot of guys in that rotation that are guys that they could count on to get innings. They're sort of like high-floor guys. And the only member of that rotation who has true upside to be a top-of-the-rotation starter when he's right is Shohei Ohtani. And what's so fascinating about him is that we got just a little taste of that in those first couple of months of 2018 that sort of let us know that even though it might have been a small sample size, he might be capable of pulling off this two-way thing that obviously hasn't been done since Babe Ruth. The Angels have spoken really highly about Ohtani over the last few months. He went out and was very aggressive with his off-season training regimen. He got in more game-like situations, changed his diet, changed his weight training, sought advice from third parties, including people at Driveline. He's been throwing a lot over the offseason, and, you know, he said that he hit 97 miles per hour during live BP yesterday. Joe Maddon said before that he had seen a video of his bullpen where he was throwing 95-plus. And as you know, Buster, that's not common for guys throwing off-season bullpen sessions. So one thing that the Angels have promised is that they're sort of going to take off the restrictions from Shohei. Joe Maddon is a big proponent of just sort of letting guys be athletes. And he'll say freely that Shohei's one of the best athletes that he's ever had. And so they want to communicate with him, and they're obviously going to be careful because he's had a lot of injuries in his short big league career, but they want to just let him go. And I think it was evident by the fact that he threw in live BP yesterday. The day before that, he was hitting in live BP. He says he feels great. We'll see what happens when the season starts, but the Angels are really optimistic, and I'll say this. If Shohei wants to be a two-way player long-term, there's a thought that it has to happen this year, because if it doesn't, if something goes awry, eventually he's just going to pick one or the other because it's just going to be too hard and they're not getting enough value out of it.
You led perfectly into my next question, because everything right now about him is absolutely positive. Everything looks great, but you know and I know the season is so long. And in his first months in the big leagues, the question was, how do you manage the physical toll? You know, how do you keep the player from wearing down? They wound up basically developing a system by which he would start once a week and then he would get time off and then he would serve as a DH. If he breaks down this year, it feels like it's all over, and it wouldn't shock me at all if they basically at the end of this year, if it doesn't work this year, that they'll go to him and say, look, we have to choose one or the other. Yes?
I think so. I think so. And I, you know, speaking of scouts who followed the Angels, a lot of them are just skeptical about whether Shohei could pull this off. I had one scout yesterday tell me that maybe the most logical thing would be to have him play a position, maybe a corner outfield, maybe a first base. And then if you want to use him out of the bullpen every once in a while, you could use him that way. But, I mean, and you're so right, Buster. I mean, I don't want to undersell just how difficult it is to pull off what Shohei wants to pull off at the major league level. There's a reason why this hasn't been done in 100 years. And you could say, and Joe Maddon has made this point, Billy Epler made this point when he was the Angels GM, that a lot of it is just being open-minded to having this type of player and grooming this type of player. And Shohei right now, he stands as sort of a test case for whether anybody could ever do this. And I'll say this, if anybody can do this, it's somebody like Shohei with the raw power he has, the arm that he has, the speed he has, and more importantly, he's such a disciplined player that I still feel like if anybody's going to pull it off, it's this kid.
Yeah, and he's such a phenomenal athlete. You mentioned Billy Epler, the former general manager. He used to tell me stories about how they would put different tasks in front of Ohtani, you know, some workout regimen, you know, those things that they do with specifics to players as they prepare, you know, stepping through cones, that sort of thing. And the athletic training staff was in awe of how quickly he would adapt physically to something that they would test him with. And, you know, they say they hadn't seen anybody like it. And this is a group of people been hanging out with Mike Trout over the last decade, some of them. So if you're right, if somebody's going to pull it off, it could be him. A disastrous week for the Seattle Mariners continues. Jared Kelenic, that great prospect they got in the deal with the Mets for Robinson Cano and Fredwin Diaz, spoke with Bob Nightingale of USA Today, basically saying that his service time has been manipulated by the Seattle Mariners. Mariners general manager Jerry Dipoto, after those comments that were made by Kevin Mather earlier this week, Jerry tried to distance himself from that. He apologized to the players Monday for Mather's array of insensitive remarks. And what Kelenic told Bob about what Jerry said in that meeting, this is Kelenic's quote. Strange. It was literally like someone farted in church. That is the exact expression on everybody's face. And I thought this before I read this story, and after reading this story, absolutely believe that you talk about a front office that's under pressure right now. I feel like they're going to be watched so closely by their players that this is going to serve Jared Kelenic well in getting him to the big league sooner rather than later. They have to, this year anyway, essentially pick the best players for the big leagues, because if they don't, this group of leaders in this team, they're not going to have any credibility with the players.
You're absolutely right, Buster. I mean, think about if Jared Kelenic goes out there and has a monster spring training. What are you going to do? How could you possibly send that kid a Triple-A Tacoma, like Kevin Mather said in that video? Not even a great spring training. Has just a good spring training and shows what he has shown at basically every level, which is that Jared Kelenic can handle basically any type of pitching. Now, I don't know where Jared Kelenic is at in his development. He spent all of last year in the alternate site. From what I've heard, he looked really good. He's going to be a star. You're right. I mean, it's... Jerry has a really uphill battle on his hands right now. A lot of it not his own making. They've worked, him and Scott Service and that staff has worked for these last 2 to 3 years on really sort of cultivating those young players. They basically, they've designed the framework of their entire organization around just those young prospects that they were grooming so they could finally be good in 2021, 2022, probably more likely. And they have a lot of trust that they need to repair there, and that is not going to be easy. And Buster, and you talk, I heard you talk about this in prior podcasts, and it's so true. this is not just an issue with Jared Kelenic and the Mariners front office. This is Kevin Mather sort of personifying the root of the distrust between the union and ownership level. It's why the union has never felt like it's been negotiating in good faith when it deals with Rob Manfred, who works for these 30 owners over these last couple of years. And, you know, and it's why I'm sure you've heard this from some players. I heard this from a couple of players over these last couple of days. The response from Kevin Mather's comments has been, yes, partly anger, but it's also been, thank you. Thank you for expressing publicly what we know to be the case about the way that these organizations are run. And the way that Kevin Mather spoke about the Mariners and the ease with which that he dehumanized players, that's sort of, I don't want to paint with a wide brush, but it's kind of the tone with which corporate America functions and also a lot of these major league teams. It's why there's such a deep divide between the players and the owners. It's why this next CBA negotiation is going to get so contentious, and it's because of what is embodied in that video. This is not just a Mariners problem. This is a Mariners problem right now. This is a problem throughout baseball, and it's why players are increasingly so wary, and they're going to rally behind this. And Jared Kelenic, I think he brought that up in his interview with Bob Nightingale yesterday. He's going to be something of a poster child for service time manipulation. He's going to take over for Chris Bryant in that sense. And the union has a huge rallying point right now around this video.
There's no doubt about it. And let's be clear here. Not every team does this. I think, for example, like Dayton Moore of the Royals has always been one who believes that you promote players to the big leagues when they've earned that right. Because that's the, you know, the good faith relationship you have to have. So when Eric Hosmer was a rookie, guess what? He started the season in the big leagues. Mike Moustakas was the same way. Because from Dayton's perspective, you know, how can you look a player in the eye if they are one of the best players and send them back to the minor leagues? And that's the problem that Jerry's in now. You got the feeling that the, you know, the Mariners are sort of hoping to work from the Tampa Bay Rays playbook, which is, you know, and over the last 15 years, the Rays have been they have been the classic example of an organization because it's a small market team and they have to maximize their resources. What they've done is they've held their top prospects, especially pitchers, down in the major leagues. They hold them down until they're fully developed and fully ready so they can hit the ground running in the big leagues. That's what's best financially for the Tampa Bay Rays. You got the feeling that's what the Mariners are kind of going for, trying to get Kelenic fully developed so when he's ready to go in the big leagues, there's not any learning curve. He doesn't spend a couple of years, you know, working through some mistakes. But now with this situation, I don't think he has that luxury. I think you and I would agree, and I'm not in Mariners camp, Jared Kelenic, pretty good chance today he's one of their 26 best players. And that's the question I think that Jerry's going to have to, you know, ask as they start the season. So that's something worth watching going forward. We've got about 2 minutes left. I want to ask you about a piece you're working on about the Dodgers and the competitive balance tax. What do you got?
Yeah, I think a lot of people in Los Angeles are a little bit surprised, probably in a good way, that they exceeded the luxury tax with the way they did with Trevor Bauer and with Justin Turner. And I think a big thing about where the Dodgers are positioning themselves right now is they got to a point after Andrew Friedman got there where they were able to get the payroll in a manageable situation. And I don't think they've ever had a hard and fast rule about exceeding the luxury tax. But what they did want to do is they wanted to put themselves in a situation where if they can't, if they do exceed the luxury tax threshold, they have the ability to get right back under it shortly thereafter and avoid those escalating penalties, avoid what happened with the Boston Red Sox where they had to trade away Mookie Betts the year before his free agent year and also shed some of David Price's salary. And that's why the Trevor Bauer contract for them, Buster, was so perfect because yes, it's $85 million for these next 2 years, but it's just for these next 2 years. And I think the Dodgers, they're very, the big thing for the Dodgers, and I know it sounds cliche, but a lot of teams, because a lot of teams say this, but for them, it's especially true. They are obsessed right now with not being content with winning a World Series last year. And it's why, as they navigated through the offseason, there was never really a chance that they were going to roll out the same group and just try it again. They always wanted to sort of infuse new blood into that clubhouse. They wanted to infuse top-level talent into that clubhouse. It's why you heard them in talks for DJ LeMahieu and at some point Marcus Semien and different position players. When it came to starting pitching, Trevor Bauer made the most sense because it was acquiring that person via free agency. It was not parting with any prospects when they've given up a ton of prospects in recent years. And they want to capitalize on this opportunity. They don't want what happened to other teams that looked like they were on the rise and they were going to have sustained winning for a long time. Then they win a championship and then they're done. They want to keep going. And they feel like because of the moves that Andrew Friedman made in this first 3-4 years, as president of baseball operations, not committing himself to long-term contracts, they have the ability to do this now, where if they need to go over the luxury tax thresholds for these next 2 years, they could do it and they'll be fine long-term.
Definitely. They are so well set up moving forward. And of course, the new collective bargaining agreement, you would assume that the competitive balance tax numbers are going to go way up, because when that last deal was negotiated, they were much lower than what teams expected. Alden, thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
Thanks, Buster. Appreciate it.
0096. This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Yeah, Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, you know, you were in the tweet you sent out from your first podcast appearance of this year the other day. You wrote more about the drop that you have, the introduction, than you did about the information we did.
I mean, you see me, this is the second time we're doing it with it, and I'm still smiling huge when I hear it. I love it so much, and I will say my parents both texted me about it. My sixth grade English teacher, who listens to every Numbers Game podcast, by the way, and who is a huge baseball fan, texted me about it. So I appreciate the buzz, and I love it so much.
That's awesome. All right, so Noah Syndergaard yesterday threw off a mound. He looks absolutely great. It was very interesting. You know, during the wintertime, I wrote about Chris Sale coming back from his Tommy John surgery. And he and Syndergaard had surgery only about, I think, a couple weeks apart. But this is a classic case where context is everything. If you are the Red Sox, if you're Chris Sale, you want to slow play his rehabilitation as he comes back from Tommy John surgery. As you know, it's typically 12 to 15 months after the surgery because he's signed through 2025. So the Red Sox, Sale, they want to do everything they can to keep him productive throughout the contract. With Noah Syndergaard, a completely different context because he's a free agent in the fall. He'll be eligible for free agency. He has every reason to want to get out on a field, and the Mets have every reason to want to get him out on the field. How big is he for the Mets in your eyes?
Yeah, huge. I mean, I think the way you put it is really great because it's not just that the Mets have every reason to put him out there. It's that he has that for himself as a free agent. But it's just such a different context and different ages, too. But, you know, we look at the Mets rotation and defense and how much that pitching staff and run prevention as a whole has improved from last year to this year, or based on, you know, the acquisitions that they've made, and getting Syndergaard back whenever it is, whether it's May, June, July, or August. It seems like it's tending toward the May, June with everything that we've seen, will just be a huge, you know, shot in the arm for them. I think that, you know, especially I think that we've seen with Noah Syndergaard that a contract year Noah Syndergaard is probably going to be a very fiery Noah Syndergaard, which I think will be a great thing for the Mets.
Yeah, he might have $100 million on the table. You know, having multiple Tommy John surgeries, I think this is the second one, right, if I remember correctly, that, yeah, he's got a lot of money on the table as he goes through this year. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 151. So that's Juan Soto's career OPS plus this thus far through his age 21 season. So 100 is league average. That's all really you need to know about OPS plus. It's adjusted. 151 is 51% better than league average in that span. So that's the sixth highest among all players through their age 21 seasons all time, with a minimum of 1,000 plate appearances. And the only guys ahead of him are Mike Trout, Ted Williams, Jimmy Fox, Rogers Hornsby, and Ty Cobb. I mean, we talk about Juan Soto. I feel like I have spent the entire winter talking about Juan Soto, and yet I'm not sure we give him the full appreciation for the fact that he is off to a Hall of Fame career start. And we're not talking about one season. We're not even talking about two at this point. I know 2020 was short, and that's nobody's fault, but what he has done, literally nobody else has done. And there's a plate appearance minimum. So it's not just the fact that he played, you know, debuting in 2018 in May and then playing 47 games last year. He's literally on a Hall of Fame start. Again, I'm already putting Mike Trout in the Hall of Fame, but I think that's acceptable. And I'm just so excited to see what he does this year. And he has a chance to be one of the youngest MVPs all time.
Number two.
Number two is 97. So Shohei Ohtani was said to have hit 97 miles an hour in a bullpen yesterday. So he threw 80 pitches in his two outings last year, and we know he wasn't able to pitch longer because of injury. Only one of those pitches was 97.0 miles an hour or faster. Wow. And I think that we forget a lot about Ohtani as a pitcher just because it's been so long since we saw him at that sort of peak that he hit initially in his rookie year in 2018. But he averaged 96.7 miles an hour on his four-seamer in 2018. And I just want to go over a little bit of how powerful he was at the plate and on the mound in 2018. So we use these percentiles on the StatCast website. You know how a percentile works. Higher number, better. You rank better within the player pool group. So as a hitter, 96th percentile exit velocity in 2018, 98th percentile hard hit rate, 96th percentile unexpected slugging, 98th in barrel rate, while pitching with a 96th percentile whiff rate, 94th percentile fastball velocity, 88th percentile strikeout rate. So he was doing all of those power pitcher, power hitter things at once. And I know, not trying to be too optimistic, but if we even get a couple months of that this year, it would just be incredible.
Number one.
Number one is 1998 to 2000. So that's when we had our last repeat champion in Major League Baseball, World Series champ, when the Yankees won three straight World Series. The current stretch without a repeat champion is the longest in the history of the four major North American professional sports. So MLB, NFL, NHL, and NBA. Of course, the Dodgers on the mind here, they have a 20.1% chance to win the World Series according to Fangraphs. That's the highest in the majors. The Yankees are next at 17.2. And then the next NL team is the third team on the list, the Padres at 13.1. But the Dodgers are expected to be a powerhouse. And I know the Padres have gotten better, and I'm really excited for all of the competition in the NL West. And I think that it's a lot less guaranteed or a slam dunk for them than even at this point last year. But it would be really fun if we finally get another repeat champ.
Yeah, and because the Dodgers are already over the competitive balance tax and there's going to be a new CBA, you can bet that if they need to add during the season, the Dodgers will be aggressive, and they're in a great position to do that. A couple of follow-ups, as you were describing Ohtani, you know, 96th percentile in fastball velocity, 94th in exit velocity, or whatever the numbers were. I was thinking, yeah, he's like the student who's like maxing out on both the verbal and the math in the SAT. And Trout last year, you said, you know, you would assume he's a Hall of Famer. Sarah, last year he got his 10th year. So on opening day last summer, that was the beginning of his 10th season. So he became eligible for Hall of Fame election. I think if he retired today, he would be unanimous selection. Anybody who didn't vote for him would be insane. Yes?
Absolutely. You know, I feel like we had that conversation with Clayton Kershaw a couple years back. That used to be the, like, if he retired today, it feels like a Baseball Tonight clubhouse kind of conversation with Greg Colley and everybody. Absolutely on Mike Trout. I mean, what he's done, he's already, I think it's like 55th or something in position player war, and everyone ahead of him is like a Hall of Famer officially, or it's Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez, who hasn't been on the ballot yet, Albert Pujols, who's still active for now. He's a Hall of Famer today. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Trout the other day on a Zoom call reminded reporters, you know, I'm still young. Like, he's still in his 20s.
He hasn't reached his
30th birthday yet, so he's got a ways to go. Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, a Fox Aligner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious, beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive.
FP Santangelo is an analyst on the Nationals broadcast. FP, great to talk with you.
Buster, thanks for having me on, man. I'm super busy in the off season. I got so much going on, and I just carved out a little time. I do nothing all day, so thanks a lot for having me on, man.
Well, great to talk with you. And before we talk about the Nationals, I was really touched after, you know, my longtime friend, my colleague at ESPN, Pedro Gomez, passed away. You tweeted out a story which I just loved because it spoke, you know, not only about Pedro, but about you. And I've gotten to know you through the years. About, you know, an exchange you had that was tense and it was kind of nasty, but it really said a lot about both of you where it wound up. Can you just tell that story?
Well, you know, a lot of times in life, we meet friends in weird ways. And I had just started out in broadcasting. And as you know, Buster, maybe you met me back then. I can't remember. But a lot of times we have a lot of player left in us as a broadcaster. Now I feel like after about 15 years that I have more broadcaster in me than player. But at that point, I was doing pregame and postgame for the San Francisco Giants. Buster was there covering Barry Bonds breaking Hank Aaron's record.
Pedro,
so every day,
right. Pedro was
I'm
there.
Sorry, Pedro. Pedro was there covering Barry Bonds. The reason I said Buster is because you're everywhere all the time. I always see you. But Pedro was there covering Barry Bonds' home run chase. And so every day I would see him at the ballpark. He seemed like a nice enough guy, but I'd go home and I'd see these reports on ESPN about there's no joy in Mudville. There's no kayaks in the cove. And every day it was negative, negative, negative. I thought, because, you know, when you're still got a lot of player in you, the media is the bad guy. Now I'm part of the media. So as the story goes, this kept building and building and building. And I'm not very good at keeping things inside. So one day during batting practice, Pedro was in the dugout and I saw him there. And to me, he was this bad guy that was always going on saying bad stuff about Barry, chasing Barry around. And the former player in me just came out. So I go up to him and I say, what's your problem? And it wasn't professional, Buster. It was horrible. I mean, I went up to him and I was very confrontational, not professional, still a lot of player left in me. And it was awkward. And there was media in the dugout and they're like, what's going on? And he said, hey, I'm just doing my job. I'm trying to present both sides of the story here. I'm just trying to show America the true story. And you guys are all kind of in your bubble here. And he's like, come on, FP, seriously, there's no kayaks in the cove. There's no this, there's no that. And I kind of walked away in a huff. And so later that day, all the media came up to me and said, what happened between you and Pedro? Like, what was going on in the dugout? And I said, well, I was just sick of him painting my former teammate, Barry Bonds, in a bad light. He was a great guy to me. He always treated my son great. He pulled me aside in the cage, Buster, in my first year as a San Francisco Giant when I was hitting 100 in April and said, hey, you want to learn how to hit? He grabbed a bag of balls. We went in the cage and we did all his drills with one hand. So I know Barry doesn't have the greatest reputation of a teammate, but to me, he was great. So I was defending him in a baseball player sort of way, in a very unprofessional media sort of way. So later that day, everybody was coming up to me saying, hey, Pedro's the greatest guy in the world. He's the nicest guy on the planet, blah, blah, blah. So a couple of days passed, cooler heads prevailed, and I walked up to him and I said, hey, Pedro, I'm sorry for, you know, coming after you the other day. By all accounts, everybody says you're just doing your job. I realize that. I'm new at this. And we started talking about it, and he was like, FP, I got it. And this is the way I do it. I want to show both sides. I have a job to do. And back then, Buster, I didn't know what having a job to do meant. I had just started in the media. I didn't know how it all worked. I still was a player that was trying to find my way in my second career. That being said, we kind of smoked the peace pipe that day. And every time Pedro saw me, he went out of his way to say hi to me with a smile on his face. He would come over and say, I'm watching you on the Nats broadcast, FP. You're doing a great job. Like, it's unbelievable how much you've grown in your position. And I'm like, Pedro, it's so good to see you. During the World Series, Buster, we were buddies, man. We were by the cage every day. He was pulling me around saying, FP, you got to meet this guy. FP, you got to meet this guy. And then finally, he said, I've been watching your broadcast all year, and you're saying Hannibal Sanchez's name wrong. And he goes, it's Anne, like the girl's name. And he pointed to his knee, and ball like a baseball. He goes, repeat after me, Anne, knee, ball. And so he called Hannibal over, and he said, FP, this is how you pronounce his name. And we were laughing. We had a great laugh. And Hannibal Sanchez, I don't care, FP, whatever. And he's a great guy in and of himself. But so Pedro Gomez and I started out as adversaries, or at least that was my opinion of him. I didn't like him at first. We smoked a peace pipe. I respected him as a guy that was doing his job so well, and we became friends. And, you know, the news, like everybody else, shocked me on Super Bowl Sunday, and I was greatly saddened, deeply saddened. I felt like I had to express myself on Twitter some way just to show people, you know, what a great guy he was. And Buster, you know, when I pass, I hope that people say half of the nice things about me that they said about Pedro. I don't think that's going to happen. But, like, what a great thing for his family to see the outpouring of love and to see how many lives he actually touched. Even jerks like me that were unprofessional to him at first, we ended up being lifelong friends. We texted each other all the time. He would text me stuff about the Nationals. And every time we ran into each other, it was like, I don't know. You know the Dusty Baker quality? That when you see Dusty Baker, you feel like you're his best friend right out of the gate. After Buster and I kind of kissed and made up, that's the way I saw it. After Pedro and I did that, it was that the rest of his career.
No question about it. And I loved your story. It was just classic Pedro and classic you too, for sure, having gotten to know you through the years. All right, let's this week we're doing Nationals preview. Let's start with a guy who's kind of like this generation's Barry Bonds in terms of his discipline and his power, and that's Juan Soto. What other worlds are there left for him to conquer as a hitter? Like, how is this guy going to get better from where he is? So, you know, being so good early in his career.
Wow. That's a tremendous question, Buster. I have no idea. I mean, I know you're going to get better every year if you're Juan Soto, and you're going to improve. But the one thing I always go to with Juan Soto is I go to the mental side of it. I mean, he's so mature for his age. He leads by example. He's 22 years old. When he gets in the batter's box, he's mature beyond his years. I don't know that he's that vocal of a leader, but guys like that, he reminds me a lot of Moises Alou in his demeanor and his personality. He's very quiet, but he goes about his business. I've seen along the ways guys having trouble dealing with success more than they've had to deal with failure, trouble dealing with success. I don't see that with Juan Soto. He's got a great family. He's very grounded. You could sign him to a 30-year, $800 quadrillion deal, and nothing's going to change this guy. He's going to come to work every single day. He's going to play hard every single day. You watch him, he runs out every single ball. His defense has been improving every single year. He's going to be a great right fielder. He learned left field at the major league level. He had never played left field in the minor leagues. And then he was the top three for a Gold Glove finalist in 2019. So his defense is way above average, in my opinion. And he's already won a world championship. So, I mean, I don't know where you go other than just kind of stay right where you're at. I don't know that there's a lot to improve on if you're Juan Soto. His plate discipline, Buster, is amazing. His power to all fields is amazing. His barrel to baseball every single night. I can't tell you how many times in 2+ years that I've seen Juan Soto get jammed. I mean, it seems like everything he hits is barreled up. And I played a year with Barry Bonds, and you hate to make comparisons because Juan Soto is his own man. And unlike anybody else I've ever seen, but as far as the plate discipline goes and his acumen for swinging at strikes and taking balls and swinging at pitches in the zone, but it doesn't matter if it's a 2-0 curveball, a 2-0 changeup, a 2-0 fastball, any count, any pitch, this guy can hit, and he's got total plate coverage. You try to bust him in, he'll get you out of there. You try to go away, he'll take you out into the bullpen in left center field. So he's got total plate coverage, and he can hit any pitch in any count. And he's been consistent with it. This isn't like we're, you know, jumping off a ledge here and complimenting him way too much. This guy is as good a hitter as I've ever seen on a daily basis.
When I've talked with executives with other teams in the National League about the Nationals in 2021, of course, everyone mentions the rotation. If all those guys have all those accomplishments, the greatest criticism that I hear all the time is about the defense. What are the keys in your mind for the Nationals defense if they're going to win in 2021?
I mean, you want me to simplify it? Just being in the right place. Last year, it seemed like whenever they were in a shift, the ball went the other way. And I don't know if that was just, you know, batting average, balls in play, bad luck. You know, guys hitting against a scouting report. But to me, with the shift, it was really drastic last year at times, and it seemed like it just like didn't work. So, I mean, you can look at the errors and you can look at different positions and kind of break it down that way. But from watching every single inning of every game in the 60-game season last year, it just seemed like the infield play, they were out of place a lot of times. And I think that'll be corrected this year with maybe some more shading instead of drastic shifting.
What, in your mind, where do the Nationals stand in the National League East when you look at these teams on paper?
Well, you know, on paper, how that goes. I mean, you can't win a pennant in February. I know that. You win it in October. So we'll see how this whole thing plays out. I think the fact that the division, in my opinion, is the toughest in baseball is great for the Nats. Buster, there were so many years where they won 97, 98 games. And it was kind of fool's gold because they were playing teams 19 times that weren't that much competition. And I think the reason they won the World Championship in 2019 is the division was tougher. So now you're playing better competition during the year, and it bodes well for going deeper into October. So I think whoever gets through the National League East this year, I mean, it's hard to say that with the Dodgers and the Padres, but whoever gets through the National League East this year has a great chance to go deep into October.
So I sent out on Twitter mentioning that I was going to talk to you for the Nationals preview. You know, give me a question for FP. And Paul Imbachides, who works for us, sent this question along. Tell the story, have FP tell the story about how you hosted Tom Brady after the Expos drafted him back in the day.
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, I tweeted at you, why are you having this guy on? And you didn't ask me that question. But the Tom Brady story is incredible. I was playing for the Expos. We came into town to play the Giants. It's my hometown. So first of all, when you're playing in your hometown, you got tickets. You got your sixth grade science teacher coming. It's kind of crazy. So I'm playing the Giants. All this stuff is going on. And John Hughes, a scout for the Expos, comes up to me early on in the day and says, hey, I got this kid. He's a draft pick that we need to sign. We drafted him. It's a last kind of a Hail Mary, so to speak, to get him to sign with the Expos. Can he follow you around all day? Put you and Rondell White with him. Rondell was my best friend on the team. So he gets to the clubhouse, tall, skinny kid, kind of hops in my hitting group. I'm kind of eye rolling it because I'm just new in the big leagues. I got to get ready for a major league game in front of everybody I know at Candlestick Park, dating myself. So this guy's in my group. Tall, skinny kid, hitting left-handed, pretty good swing, but he's taking his time in the cage. And on the road, Buster, it's like organized chaos. You got so much time to hit it. Jump in, jump out. Hey, you're taking too many swings. Let's go. He was digging in, getting a toe hold, taking his time, basically calling time out with the umpire. Guys are screaming at him. And like Mike Lansing was super abrasive in a funny way as a teammate. He was, let's go. Come on. Swing bat. Let's go. So he pretty good swing, right? So then he kind of follows me around on defense. We shag a little bit. Apparently he was a catcher. So he gets in the clubhouse. Really nice kid. Very polite, as you'd imagine, with an 18-year-old kid on a major league field taking BP. All of a sudden, he tells me he's quarterback at University of Michigan or going to be quarterback at University of Michigan. And when he said that, it was all over. My mom went to University of Michigan. I grew up maize and blue. My dad was a high school football coach who idolized Bo Schembechler. So as soon as he said – and every major league baseball player – is a frustrated high school football star. So once we heard that he was a quarterback at Michigan, I was going around introducing him as a future quarterback at the University of Michigan. So we held court in the clubhouse, introduced him to Pedro Martinez, introduced him to Felipe, all the players. And at that time, Buster, there was rumors of Northern Virginia and the Expos moving, and there was a lot of disgruntled Expos. And they were coming over saying, don't sign with us. We're cheap. Well, why would you sign with the Expos? Like, if it's the Yankees, maybe you have a decision to make. It's the Expos, dude. And I said, yeah, bro, you're good looking. I said, go to Michigan. You'll have fun off the field. And you get to play in the big house in front of 100,000 people or 200 people in, I don't know, some small minor league town making $800 a month. I go, this is a no-brainer. Play football, dude. Not that we had anything to do with it, Buster. But this story gets better every year. This was supposed to be a me telling the story once, but now that he was in his 10th Super Bowl, it pops up every single year. And before it's over, I probably introduced him to Giselle by the time this is over, the way the legend is growing. But we had nothing to do with Tom Brady playing football, but I didn't know about this. So after his third Super Bowl, John Hughes called me and said, you remember that kid in the clubhouse that day? That was Tom Brady. But he wasn't Tom Brady then. but that Tom Brady is now. I'm like, no, that was Tom Brady that day. Like, you know, you remember things like that because I don't know. It's not every day that an 18-year-old comes and takes BP with a major league team on a major league field. Crazy story.
I love that story. That's awesome. FB, thanks for doing this. Always great to catch up with you.
Buster, thanks for having me on, man. It's been a pleasure. It's going to be a fun season. Hopefully things go off as planned and we have a normal 2021 season.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. First up, we've got Royals_Chiefs at Royals_Chiefs25. Major League Baseball needs an expansion team or two, he says in all caps. It would solve so, so many issues for all these free agent players and generate revenue. I think this should have been done years ago. What's to lose?
Well, right now they have to resolve the Rays situation. The Rays are looking for a new ballpark. Oakland's looking for a new ballpark. It does make sense in some regard, getting to 32 teams. I mean, an even number of teams in both leagues. I'm assuming they'll wind up going to four divisions in each league, four divisions of four teams. And yes, I do think within the next decade, there are going to be two expansion teams, but for now, no, I don't think it would help the free agents at all. I actually think it'd be worse. I think it would water down the number of players in the market. What needs to happen is the Player Association and Major League Baseball need to agree on a system that works for both sides. And this current system right now is crushing the players.
All right. There you go, Royals Chiefs. Next up, our pal Kyle Benning. Hello, Kyle, at Kyle_Benning. He writes in, is ESPN planning on doing mic'd games again for spring training? And if so, which players, teams, matchups are you most looking forward to? Any intel on that?
Yeah, Kyle, look, I'm a private in this army, and I don't know for sure what they have in the works. Our Sunday night group is actually not doing one of the four exhibition games, but I assume, especially with the broadcast teams working from home during spring training, that they're going to rely a lot on the players and microphones. And I don't know for sure if Freddie Freeman has been asked to wear a microphone, but you know, if the Braves are one of the games that we have, absolutely, he would be one. You know, he was so great last spring. And I hope, again, we get to hear the Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant show. I don't know if you remember that, Taylor, how great those two guys were last year.
Oh, yeah, I love that. We need and Bryce a mic'd
Harper.
Up game.
And
yeah.
We talked yesterday with Tom McCarthy about Bryce Harper with a microphone.
Good guy, Bryce.
Yeah.
Last one for today, my guy Kevin Seipold at Global Travel 62 writes in, Buster, often in trades there are provisions of a players to be named later. Could you explain how that works? Is it an honor system between GMs that they can work out players who will be traded? Do teams ever have trouble agreeing?
No, I think that most trades, and I can't say absolutely that all trades are this way, they agree on a list from which the team getting the player to be named will pick. So in other words, they'll say, okay, here are a group of 15 prospects and you get to pick one of these guys. You know, one of the most famous stories involving that was, if you remember that massive trade between the Rangers and the Yankees involving Alex Rodriguez, Alfonso Soriano was in that. And the Rangers also were getting a player to be named. And one of the guys who was on the list that the Rangers could have picked was a second baseman named Robinson Cano. And they passed and they added somebody else. The Red Sox right now, you know, have this this three-team deal with Kansas City and the Mets when they dealt Andrew Benintendi to the Royals. They've got three players to be named in that deal, and their feeling was, look, there wasn't any minor league baseball last year. There weren't any current scouting reports, so we're just going to take our time. We're going to slowly work through these lists and watch these players and see what we see before we pick a player, and that can sometimes take months and months.
Interesting, especially interesting approach here in 2021.
Yep, I agree. I think it's smart.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Send your Braves questions. Jeff Francoeur on the pod tomorrow. Very exciting stuff. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Absolutely. My thanks today to Alden, to Sarah, to FP, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.